and two old cats, they called on out to me.
KNBR's Giants postgame continues. You're talking baseball with Marty Lurie on The Sports Leader.
No. All right. Nice to have you back with us. Of course, that's the song that we love. That means Kerry Crowley is joining us of the Bay Area News Group. And Kerry Crowley, good news for everybody up at Bodega Bay. The tides are opening up there. The fish market is open. They'll be featuring the fresh local California King salmon. As the season started yesterday, the snack bar is offering takeaway items such as shrimp and crab cocktails, clam chowder, fried calamari, as well as hamburgers and hot dogs up at Bodega Bay at the tides up there. The fish market is open, so that's the best news I had all day today. And I know you're partial to Original Joe's, but I could get you up to Bodega Bay, can't I?
Marty, I might be the only San Francisco resident who doesn't eat seafood, but I'm happy to accompany you up
really?
There. We could do a live show, and everyone enjoys the takeout. Why not?
Sir, you don't eat seafood?
Not at all. Not at all. No seafood for me.
This is a revelation. All right. All right. So you're not going up to Bodega Bay to have the King Salmon. We'll find something else for you up there at the time.
Yeah, I'm sure they've got a burger on the menu there, Marty.
Now Original Joe's makes more sense to me. Now I see why you're addicted. All right, very good. How you doing? How's your week?
I'm hanging in there. This is my first furlough week, so I spent the time working on a project that was not related to sports journalism or writing about the Giants. I've wanted to sink my teeth into for a few years, so hopefully by the end of this furlough period, I'll be able to show it off.
All right, very good. Are you building something, or is this something written?
A combination of both. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's. I don't want to say too much in case I don't finish the project, because
right.
Then I would just be letting everyone down.
It's not like a soapbox derby or anything like that.
No, it's far less exciting.
All right, very good. All right, well, I think we're going to get some baseball news. I mean, things are happening. A lot of trial balloons, you know, through the voices of Bob Nightingale and Jeff Passan and Scott Miller and the usual suspects have put out the word from baseball, what they're thinking of doing. What's your reaction to it?
Well, it certainly seems like they are intent on playing some form of baseball in 2020, and whether that's 81 games, whether it's 100 games, whether it takes place in teams' original cities or in places like Arizona and Florida, it definitely sounds much more positive that baseball will be played and the games will count than things did maybe a week or 2 weeks ago. So I think that's a really encouraging sign, and it's nice to think about the potential of these teams restarting baseball activities within the next 2 or 3 months, because that can lead to more hope and that can lead to the games that everyone wants to see unfold.
Well, this is only May. As I kept last week, I kept saying it's only April. This is only May 2nd today. And let's say you started a season in July and you had August and September. You probably could get 50 games out of that, maybe a little bit in July. You know, maybe you could get 60 games or so. And if you even wanted to continue into October, you could probably get 80 and then start a postseason that way. It's not unreasonable. It's just a question where the country will be at that point, because there still are a lot of hurdles. And people talk about it. We had good discussions about this. Nick Pecoraro is going to be on the show today from the Arizona Republic. He said, well, what if some of the players don't want to go? What if some, you know, say, look, I prefer not to go and do this? What could happen at that point?
Yeah, that's fascinating to think about, and very real to think about, too, especially if you're talking about quarantining teams and players,
right.
Arizona and Florida. And I think that the Players Union in Major League Baseball will have to come to some form of an agreement. But could you see a bunch of players who are in their mid to late 30s retire all of a sudden? Do players like Tony Watson and Jeff Samardzija say that they're retiring and then come back a year later? I'm not sure how baseball will handle a situation like that. And it will definitely be one of the primary storylines, without a doubt, because there will be players who voice their objections. There will be family members of players who voice their objections as well. So because I do think that baseball will probably look to start sooner rather than later, and we may not have all the safeguards in place to ensure a healthy restart. And so I think that those are all problems that that are probably being tackled hypothetically at the Major League Baseball office.
Yeah, and you just have to wait and see what happens. But what if Mike Trout says, you know, I'm having a baby, and I'm sorry, it's not for me, or Kershaw says, I'm not going to do that. And I think they probably have a right not to do it if there's some compromise of a potential compromise of their health, which is going to be a very interesting situation.
And you're going to hear a lot from the union representatives for each team. For the Giants, it's actually Austin Slater, and I find that interesting because usually it's a long tenured veteran. Matt Cain was the Giants union rep for a long, long time during his career, and so you're going to hear a lot from the union reps in the coming weeks in the conversations that they have with the league office and MLB league officials. You'll hear from Tony Clark on what the players have to say about all these various proposals, because there's a new proposal every day. Like you said, you know, maybe it's the Arizona plan. Maybe it's the Arizona and Florida plan. Last week we were talking about Texas, and now we're talking about playing games in different divisions, but all in teams' original cities. And so I think that there's still so many hypotheticals being worked through on a daily basis that they have to at least be asking themselves that question too, as to whether the players will all be interested and all be supportive of whatever they do adopt.
Well, we'll get action this week or next week. That's my feeling about it. But the month of May, I've said this before, this is the month to put some plan in place. And then if you can meet the dates, you meet it. If you can't, you can't. But they've got to get something going here. This is the week of Willie Mays' birthday coming up May 6th, and I've kicked this around with everybody tonight. First time you met Willie Mays, and your thoughts about it?
Well, my first time I met Willie Mays was a few springs ago in the clubhouse at Scottsdale Stadium, the old clubhouse. And I just shook his hand, was introduced to him, but I never had a conversation with Willie until this spring, and you were sitting there this spring in Scottsdale in the Don and Charlie's booth that was set up there for Murph when I sat down with you, John Shea, who wrote the great Willie Mays biography, 24, and Willie. And John Shea brought up that I had played high school football, and that led Willie into a story that was just incredible about playing quarterback on his Alabama high school team, and how, you know, he wasn't the mobile quarterback that I thought he was. He was a guy who would sling the ball down the field and show off that five tool power with his arm. And I thought that was really interesting to think about. Willie is the quarterback. And could you imagine if he'd gone into a different sport? I mean, we talk so much about a guy like Michael Jordan and his failed baseball career. Could you imagine if Willie Mays had gone and played football or gone and played basketball? Because there's no question that he had the athletic talent and he was the caliber of athlete to do something like that. And so it was just so fun to sit down with Willie for 20 to 30 minutes there in Scottsdale and have that conversation. And I consider it one of the absolute greatest moments in my time on the beat.
Yeah, I remember that. I'm glad you refreshed my memory. Yeah, that you were very excited to sit there and talk to Willie, and Willie was giving you the business, which is what
he was,
which is what he usually does. So, yeah, that was a good moment. Yeah, he'll be 89 May 6th, and John did a great job with the book that's coming out in another week or so. So we're looking forward to having John on again. I had him on in spring training to talk about it. The other things we kind of kicked around tonight was sort of fun. Grant Brisby is going to come on later on the show, and he's been doing a countdown of his favorite Giant home runs. Have you seen any of this? Have you followed?
Yeah, I have. I followed along a little bit and got a chance to catch up this week.
Yeah, it's very good. He really did a nice job with it. So I was going to ask you, and Katie is coming on a little bit later to chat a little bit about her favorite home runs. You got favorite Giant home runs for you, very special ones that come to mind? And I never know where people are going to go with this one. It could be anything.
Oh, I think that seeing Barry Bonds hit 71 and 72 off Chan Ho Park, I can remember I was watching it from the end of my parents' bed. I was about 6 years old and watching it on television. And you just had a feeling that it was going to happen that night. Giants-Dodgers, was a beautiful evening out at what was then Pac Bell Park. And Bonds hitting the two shots to right field and doing it in the same game to create some distance from McGuire and ultimately get to 73. Those are really vivid memories for me. But with regard to Grant's list, Marty, I really recall sitting in my downstairs room and watching him hit number 70 off of Wandy Rodriguez, the left-hander for the Houston Astros who came in. Mm-hmm. And Grant wrote about that moment this week and how the Astros just refused to pitch to him, and they just did everything they could to make sure Bonds didn't hurt them. And then in the end of a blowout game, Bonds took Rodriguez deep. And every time you see a Bonds home run replayed, it's that same crisp, smooth, perfect swing where he just torches the baseball, and it's always, always on the sweet spot of that bat, regardless of how inside the pitch is thrown. And so those are really some of my first memories of Giants home runs that have stuck with me up until this point and will stick with me forever.
Yeah, you know, it's a shame. What can I say? It's a shame that he had to get involved with steroids and all that stuff, and who, you know, not to rehash the trial and Greg Anderson and the calendar and all the authenticities and all that stuff, and just go through that. What an amazing baseball player! And mm-hmm. but for that part of his history, he may not have hit 70, but he may have hit 600 home runs. Who knows what would have happened in his career? But a fabulous, fabulous baseball player. And we appreciate it because for those moments I was there, that, you know, the Chan Ho Park moment, and just the place went nuts. And you know, he got the one pitch to hit, and he hit it so far. It was just unbelievable how far he hit the ball. But it's just a shame that it has to be clouded because he really – it's like Clemens. These are two of the greatest players who ever played the game.
You know, it's interesting, Marty, because I consider myself pretty lucky and fortunate that the 73 home run season happened when I was 7 years old. And, you know, I couldn't process the fact that he was on performance-enhancing drugs or taking steroids. I didn't know what any of that meant. All I knew is that as a seven-year-old, the home run record was going down, and it was a hometown guy doing the job. I mean, I was watching this left-handed power hitter destroy baseball, and that's all I could really contextualize at the moment. And so I think I was fortunate to be younger at the time because I'm not sure how I would have felt about it being 13, 14, 15 years old and understanding that, you know, these are tainted records that are happening and that this isn't natural. And so just to kind of have that childhood wonder and awe really made me, you know, fall in love with the game of baseball. And I'm not sure that had the home run season that Barry Bonds had occurred when I was a little older, I would have appreciated it as much at the time. And so it's just interesting to look back on the perspective I had then. Now, the perspective that I have now as a journalist covering the game.
Yeah, yeah, very good. No, it's good to hear that approach. And how you view it. And Katie, very similar. She we had a nice discussion that she's going to come on a little bit later about her approach. And it's interesting to see the different generations of how mm-hmm. they look at baseball. And that's what makes baseball the beautiful game. I was saying to Bruce Jenkins today, I miss the drama of the games. You know, if it's torture or whatever, I don't care what it is, the last three innings, that's when the game happens. And those last six outs, those last three outs for a closer, they're always dramatic. I miss that part of the game. That's what I miss.
What I'll tell you is I will never, ever complain again about sitting through a three-hour rain delay in Pittsburgh. And I feel like I've done that five times in the six games that I've covered at PNC Park. I always thought to myself, oh, this is the worst. This is terrible. We're going to restart at 11 o'clock at night. And now I would do anything to watch baseball at 1 in the morning in a rainy Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania ballpark. I think it's crazy how much the perspective this has given me and how much I really have come to appreciate the game. And I know that when opening day eventually does happen, it's going to be unlike any other opening day because of the drama, because of the excitement, and because of how much we all miss the game right now. And so that's what I'm really looking forward to.
All right. Have you fixed your computer yet to take Katie on in this game that you're supposed to be playing?
We finally got it up and running yesterday. The internet on the TV has been fixed, and so now that game can take place. I haven't talked to Katie this week, but I should let her know that I can no longer dodge her with the technology issue.
All right, very good. So you're keeping busy, and how long is the furlough supposed to last for you?
It'll last 4 weeks, so 1 week down, 3 weeks to go, and then eventually it could be extended, and, you know, I don't want to speculate any further on that, given a conversation I had with management. So it's probably best that I stay silent on that matter.
All right.
We
miss you. And, you know, this is time for everybody to have to pull together. And we just hope that people cooperate. And I know you're outside and you're a runner and an athlete and everything else. And you just have to be smart and, you know, wear your mask and do your social distance and get a grip on this thing. And that's what we all have to do. So you got to see it on the front line, you know, covering the stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've been really proud of everyone around me that I know. Everyone's been social distancing. Everyone's been really understanding the situation. And you see and read absolutely everything about it as a journalist. You read all angles of the story. And just everyone I know has taken this really seriously. And obviously, we're all excited for things to open back up again. But we also understand that we definitely have to be careful when things do. And I think that social distancing will be the dictionary.com word of the year or the whatever you want to call it. But I think that, everyone has really understood the seriousness of this and is looking forward to a safe and careful reopening when it does happen.
I hope so. And baseball, too. We need it. And I'm glad to be able to do this show and get everybody on tonight. So I appreciate you being on. I didn't give you the Doc Ellis question. Doc Ellis pitched in the early 70s, and he was really kind of a character. I'll give you a homework assignment to look up Doc Ellis. But
I've watched the Doc Ellis documentary.
That's fabulous. Yeah, so he hit the first three Reds. He said he was going to do it. He's going to hit everybody. And he hit the first three and walked Perez with the bases loaded and tried to the next batter, and they finally took him out. And he didn't like the Cincinnati Reds. And my good friend Elliot Kolker from Marin County sent an email to me and said that Dizzy Dean did the same thing. He didn't like a certain team, and he said, "I'm going to hit them all." And Frankie Frisch, the manager, came out and took him out. He said, "Diz, it's not that I don't want you to hit them all, but we have a train to catch, and we got to get you out of the game." So that's the beauty of baseball, the stories of baseball. There's nothing like it. So I'm glad to have you on, and how the folks doing?
They're doing well. They're doing well, hanging out here in San Francisco. And, my mom's continuing to work hard on this for the sheriff's department, and my dad's working on it too. So, it's getting through it.
All right, cool. All right, take care, Kerr, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Week.
Thanks all so right. much, Marty.
Anytime. All right, that's Kerry Crowley. Boy, he works very hard.